This is the Cubs Related podcast presented by Cubs Insider. It's the All-Star break. The Cubs at 43 and 45 are 5.5 games back of the Milwaukee Brewers. And in That's Cub fashion, Wade Davis gives up the 10th inning go-ahead homer in the All-Star game. So that kind of caps off, I mean, in a meaningless game, I say that half-heartedly, that kind of caps off a very odd first half of the baseball season. So this podcast with Corey and I will be mostly about recapping the first half, and then towards the tail end, we'll do some second half predictions, and then specifically preview the Baltimore series that starts on Friday. Corey, we have a lot to talk about, don't we?
I got to be honest with you, Brendan. I am really reveling in the fact that the Cubs don't ruin, you know, 4 hours of my day for the last few days.
Isn't that
nice? Kind of nice?
Yeah,
it is nice.
I was thinking about that. I have a better mood. I have much more free time. I have less stress. It's great. Maybe they should do this every now and then.
Yeah, these just extended breaks. Yeah, you know, you throw on some 2016 highlights. You don't have to watch anybody giving up runs in the first inning. It's great. It's a rest for us as well, as much as the players.
Yeah. So let's just get into this. Let's start with the, I guess we can start with the disappointments of the first half, which you have plenty to choose from. But let's do our top three, and it can be players, it can be generalities, categories, whatever you want. But if you were to list, I guess, your one of your disappointments from the first half, what would it be?
Addison Russell. That's quick. I'm going to steal it from you, but I mean,
did you read my Cubs Insider post? Is that why?
I don't read anything you write ever.
Okay. All right. So Addison Russell.
You know, it just, I think, is, you know, it really is just one of those things where it's just played out pretty much exactly the opposite of what I would have thought, what you would have thought, what you've written, you know, over and over again, what many other, you know, national writers and scouts and stuff have thought. And, you know, look, this isn't me giving up on Addison for, you know, not playing well to start the year. But, you know, I think we had seen the progression the first 2 years in the big leagues. You know, and despite driving in an awful lot of runs last year, you know, we were still not at the level, you know, that you wanted him to be at the plate. And I think we all, you know, or a lot of us justifiably saw a lot of trends going in the right way, you know, his plate discipline, his batted ball profile, you know, and just obviously the tools that he's been bringing to the table since he was a prospect. And it just, it's been worse. So I think it's hard to, you know, I think it's hard to top that. You know, you combine that with the off the field issues that he has had. You know, and it just, you know, now we're in a place where when you see his name, but prior to, you know, like a month ago, 2 months ago, if you had seen his name in a trade rumor, immediately you knew it was false because you're just, there's no way. Now you know, you're at the point where you look at it and you go, yeah, they might.
I don't know.
I don't
really
think so
think
either,
that?
Brendan, but I'm, but you understand what I'm saying. If you saw his name on MLB trade rumors in spring training, you would have been like, what? Like, no way.
I guess
but now you're like, well, okay, here, you know, I guess now it's more of like, wow, are we really at this point? You know, it's not so unbelievable.
Right. I think it's like, less unbelievable, if that makes sense. Like, I still think it's unbelievable, but I mean, if it were to happen, then I guess it's justifiable. But I mean, Russell's my number one amongst several. And I think you just hit it right perfectly. It's the trends that we saw towards the tail end of the last half of last season going into the playoffs, especially the World Series and the latter half of the NLCS. That's the type of shortstop that we thought would really blossom this year. A guy who had 20 to 25 homer power. He had 21 homers last year, a guy that was taking really good pitches, really good pitcher's pitches that typically he would have swung at when he was younger. He was finally laying off those. His contact rate was bordering league average. So when you combine the plate discipline and the power and the contact profile, you think, okay, maybe we have something that's a 5 to 6 win player when you factor in his gold glove caliber defense. So that's the most disappointing thing for me. But the one part about Addy that really disappoints me is just the shoulder injury, because it's that type of injury that you just don't know if it's going to go away this year. We saw it. We've seen guys like Jason Wirth and Bryce Harper deal with shoulder injuries that really didn't allow them to play at their best in years past. So whereas like someone like Schwarber, like this is a good contrast, because Schwarber's going to be in our disappointment list as well. He's got to be top three, right, Corey? So the reason I'm more disappointed in Addy than I am in Schwarber, because Schwarber doesn't have any injury concerns right now. I mean, the knee is healthy. Everything seems healthy. So really all Schwarber needs to do is just own in on his discipline and his approach, and we're already seeing signs of that. Whereas for Addy, you just don't know. You don't know if this injury is going to bug him the entire year. So you don't know if this is like what you're going to get this year. So it's frustrating. I was writing about it on Cubs Insider today, and it bugs me. But would Schwarber be your second, I guess, biggest disappointment, or is there? For me, I think it would have to be, right? But I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, he's in the three. I mean, my three were probably going to be Addison. I think is a clear number one. I think Schwarber is, but only relative to, you know, what my personal, I guess, expectations were for him. I see this all the time where, like, it's like a meme to make fun of Cubs fans, like, for thinking that Schwarber was, you know, like the next Babe Ruth. Like, I certainly never said that or thought that. I don't know anybody that did. You know, that feels like a nice straw man for people to, you know, make fun of Cubs fans. Like, I don't remember anybody saying that. Or anybody that, you know, whose opinion should be taken with anything more than a grain of salt. But, you know, for him to not be a productive hitter is definitely disappointing, you know. And
I mean, with a AAA.
Disappointing. I just mean, like, you know, it's not like I thought, oh, my God, he's going to win the MVP. You know, now I'm so disappointed. It's like, no, but, you know, I didn't expect him to be hitting 170, right, and being moved all over the order, striking out at that rate, you know. So he's definitely up there. And then I think you could kind of pick and choose how to phrase it. But I mean, I think the obvious answer for the third one is just the starting pitching staff. I think everybody's included in that. John, if you're listening, I'm sorry, but you have a 4.3 ERA. So we got to throw you in here.
I mean, 10 runs in one start though, Corey, like, I mean, I know it was bad, but it went up almost a full point.
Well, to be fair, if a certain meaning MVP turns a double play, it's 0 runs. But
admitted that too. He did admit that.
Listen, Brendan, you know I'm not going to drag Johnny too far down. All right, I already admitted that he, you know, warrants being in this conversation, but I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to drag him here. But yeah, I mean, you know, look, you've got like Arrieta and Lester in the 4.3s. I mean, I think, and I don't remember the first person that I saw this from, but it's like, you know, it sums it up. It's like, who's the ERA leader for Cubs starting pitchers right now?
It's Eddie Butler.
It's Eddie freaking Butler, Brendan. Eddie Butler is the leading starting pitcher on this team right now. So I think that pretty much sums up where we're at as far as that's concerned. So obviously that's a disappointment. And I think, you know, and a point I've made in the last, you know, few episodes is that I think this rotation was never, you know, necessarily destined to repeat what they did last year. But you certainly weren't expecting a regression like this.
Someone just like knocked him down with a bulldozer, dude. I mean, everyone across the board is throwing 3 miles per hour slower for the most part. It's ridiculous.
Slower, inflated ERAs, you know, and for as much as the first inning thing is a bit random and probably a good bit of, you know, just bad timing and sequencing, you know, it's tough to let the, I think there's been a good debate kind of going as we near the second half here of who is your bigger, where are you putting more of your angst or blame for how this first half has gone, between the offense and their inconsistency to get hits, leave runners in scoring positions, you know, all the stuff that we've talked about, versus the starting pitchers. And, you know, I think you can definitely make an argument on both sides, but I do agree with a lot of people thinking and saying that constantly being down in games is definitely affecting the offense. And I really wouldn't entertain any argument otherwise. It is a vastly different game from a hitter's perspective, from an approach perspective, from all sorts of things, when you are trailing every single game. I know, like, earlier in the year, it was like kind of a joke, like, oh, here come the first inning runs. After a while, it's not a joke anymore. It's like, this is a real tax on everybody on this team. Like, they're down 2 to, I mean, you know, the other day they were down 10 to nothing before anybody came to the plate. You know, yeah. You can't be, you know, we're worried about a lot of these guys too, you know, and their approach, and then they're swinging out of the zone. They're, you know, leaving runners on and stuff. It's like, it's hard to go up there and be super patient and, you know, really focus on your approach and what you're doing at the plate when, you know, every game you're down by 4 runs, you know?
No, I would agree with that. I guess I'm not a fan of, like, the whole reductionist argument of, like, what's the central cause of the Cubs' struggles, because, you know, you can also make the argument, well, if they were hitting better, then maybe that would help the pitchers, right? Maybe they're operating under their mindset.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's not it's just, yeah, you know, a topic that's been floating
around. No, I've seen that too. I think, I mean, if you want to play that game, like, yeah, of course, the Cubs pitching staff going from one of the league's best to, you know, in the bottom tier of the league is affecting them. But at the same time, their team WOBA is also in the bottom third of the league. It's like 21st or 22nd. It's just, mm-hmm. It's in the defense, like the core of the defense. Like, what the hell happened to the defense? I don't even know, like, where to even go to.
Well, you know, and I don't remember if we recorded after. Did we? Maybe we did. I don't remember. But I just remember thinking that
after the Pirates game.
Yeah.
No, we didn't record.
Okay. So, like, I don't think it was Sunday. I think it might have been Saturday, where there was the like a double into the left field corner, and the Schwarber throw to Baez. I think it was Francisco Cervelli that was running.
Baez air nails it, right?
Yes, yeah. Dead to rights. And I was friends of mine or whatever who root for different teams will ask me, like, what I think is going on here, or just any thoughts. And I said, go watch this play where Schwarber, right, the, you know, non-defensive left fielder, right? I did air quotes for those of you.
I could tell by the inflection of your voice.
For those of you who can't see me, which is everybody. But Schwarber gets the right relay to Baez, and you have Baez, right, the defensive wizard, airmails the throw. I mean, Cervelli's out by a year if that throw gets to Wilson on time.
Yeah.
And it ends up going, Arrieta has to, like, jump and catch it. And I was like, if you want to know what's wrong, watch this play. Obviously, that doesn't explain everything. And obviously, Javi's not the problem.
It's just sloppy. It's sloppy play.
Right. And it's like, you have a guy who is, at this point, world renowned for stealing outs and getting outs at all costs. And he's screwing up simple relay throws.
Yeah.
Right? And that was a big run. I believe that puts the Pirates up 4-2 in that game, or up by 2 in that game. And, you know, it's just like,
well, the runner advanced at third base too. Or
yeah, it's just like, this is, I think, a good example of what's wrong. It's like, they're not making these simple plays. And it's not like an indictment on Javi Baez. It's just an example of, like, this is the kind of stuff that this team was not only executing, they were executing on an insane level, like literally the best in Major League history. They were executing these plays. They were executing plays much harder than that and that don't get turned into outs. And here you know, they can't even get a catcher running home on an easy relay throw that the base runner misreads, mm-hmm. you know? So, and I remember watching that and thinking like, yeah, that's about right. So,
I'm gonna go with my third disappointment. I think, there's really no reason to rank these because they're all just, you know, atrocious.
But I think Addy's the clear one. I got to be honest with you.
I think people would disagree with us, not because we're necessarily...
Other people have lower expectations?
Yeah, I would think so. Just because of the surface numbers last year with batting .240 and mm-hmm. everything. Like, I think most people would say Schwarber going to AAA was by far the biggest disappointment. But...
Fair enough.
Yeah, on the other hand, though, like, okay, this is my other big disappointment is Jason Hayward, and it's a good comparison when we talk about Kyle Schwarber, because the two essentially have created the same amount of runs this year. I would go on Fangraphs right now, but the website is down. But I can tell you with great confidence that their WOBA is within like a thousandth, like maybe 5/1000ths of a point. Differential. So
yeah, Jason getting a real pass because
really
other people are
pass.
Picking him up.
But
in
not only that, Corey. I would
the hate train.
Like, I don't even think he's getting a pass. I think he's still. I think he's getting like credit or something. Like, what's the word I'm looking for? I think people are encouraged by his play.
And, I don't know if that's true anymore. I think they were.
They were.
Yeah, I don't know since he's come back. I think it's more that there's just too much going on. It was a lot easier to pile on mm-hmm. Hayward last year because everything else was working.
Right.
So I noticed this the other day, and I remember – wait, so what website? Fangraphs is down? What website do I have to go to?
is there any other WOBA websites out there? I would love to find out.
I don't know.
Like, this usually happens, actually. Late at night on the West Coast, like, it sometimes it just goes straight down. I don't know if they update something, but it's...
Anyway, folks, this is what it's like to listen to a podcast when their main resource is, doing site repair. So,
yeah.
Here we are. I'm scrambling. I'm on MLB.com right now. I feel like it's like...
I don't think they're going to have
2005.
WOBA.
So... I was just thinking the other day, and I think I said this to you, and I was just like, listen, I don't want to be that guy, right? Even though I do love being that guy.
You love being that guy.
But Jason Hayward is back under a 700 OPS. He's at 698 right now. And that's with a pretty decent start to the season that he had. You know, we're back now to under 700. And granted, like, I think that his defense and base running and that stuff is maybe more valuable now. I don't know. I was having this discussion online the other day where I'm not really sure, but I feel like maybe I value the consistency there a little more now because everything else feels so inconsistent.
Yeah, I think with the defensive holes this year, you can appreciate Hayward's defense a little
bit more. Whereas that was I say that because that was kind of the argument last year where it was like, well, you know, he's doing all these things and we want him in there for that. But people would get frustrated because of the offense wasn't there and it was, you know, for the majority of the rest of the team and stuff. So I think I value it more now, but we are at the point, right? And I really had hoped to not have to do this again. But you got to start thinking about how bad this guy's bat is. And in general, like, I don't think his swing looks particularly different. His batted ball profile certainly looks strikingly similar, you know, with the pop-ups and the grounders.
I think he looks worse recently. Like, I think I know it's terrible, but I mean, that Pittsburgh series, Corey, I think he popped up to the left side of the field like three or four times. And then he had those.
Right. And it just, you know, it's a shame to be having to think about this again, but you know, it just is, we're at the point where you got to consider that bad. I know there was, a point in the game, I think it was also that Saturday game. So I'm really
they're all blending together.
Yeah, well, and I was being really honest. I really am trying. I didn't watch the Home Run Derby. I didn't watch the All-Star game. I'm trying to really just stay out of it.
This is the first year where I haven't watched either one of those events. It's kind of odd.
Yeah, so, but there was, you know, there was an at-bat with runners on in that game, I think on Saturday. And it, I think it was against Tony Watson. So, you know, it just screamed pinch hit for Hayward.
He did it.
Right. Hayward, I think, pops out.
Either that or he hit a dribbler to the pitcher. I know he did that. He did both of those that game.
Yeah, I don't really recall, but it was late in the game, and it was an obvious, like, get a righty in there type moment. And I know Ryan Davis on Twitter, who was at the game, I think for Sporting News, he writes all over the place, but he said he asked Joe, you know, did you consider pinch hitting Almora, who had, you know, like a 900 OPS against lefties versus Hayward, who's in like the 600 against lefties. And Joe's answer was just flat out no.
Yeah, I wonder if that meant like, yeah, like I just didn't think it was good, or like, no, I didn't think about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, put too much, you know, spin on that for Joe. I mean, it was a one word answer, so who knows what he meant by it. It could have meant, you know, a lot of things. And my first thought was, you know, with Hayward just coming back, you know, maybe you just want to keep him out there, see what's going on with him, because he's been, you know, dealing with the hand injury and was only back for a few games. But it just was one of those things where you're reading it going like, Joe, I wish you would have thought about it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. This guy is not a good hitter, and maybe he can turn it around. And, you know, we talked a lot in the offseason about the work that he was doing, and this isn't necessarily something that gets fixed in, you know, what has it been since he went there in December or January to start working on it? So we're talking like a max, like 7-8 months.
Yeah. But you know what,
Corey? That's not that long.
You know, I totally agree, but I think I expected more. I didn't expect a complete rebuild.
Yeah,
but,
no, like, I'm agreeing with you. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's just like he looks bad. And you know, I didn't really put that much into it until you look at the OPS and you're like, oh, yeah, like we're under 700 again, and with the offense playing the way it is, it sticks out like a sore thumb, you know?
Right. And if you're a cost-controllable player and you're putting up elite-level defense and still hitting poorly, that's one thing, but Hayward's getting paid on average $23 million a year. And when he first signed, I thought for sure he would opt out after the third year, just given the market value with Harper and Machado and all the big guys coming off the books. And, you know, Hayward's value, if he continued to hit like he did in St. Louis, probably would have warranted him opting out. But now you got to think, holy crap, the Cubs are stuck with this guy for what? 6 more baseball seasons at 23 a year. Like, this could end, like, this hurts me to say, but this could end up being the worst contract in Theo Epstein's tenure, even with Boston. And, you know, he made some bad ones too with Boston, with like the Agon deal and everything. So, I mean, we're looking at
Well, let's be honest, Brendan, there's no such thing as a good contract for Adrian Gonzalez, okay? Paying a guy to come whine.
Yeah, but I mean, like, this is, we're getting to a point, and like cringing saying this, where it's you got to question whether you can play someone like this.
Yeah, the sample's getting large enough. I mean, I think we all last year.
It's almost 1,000 at bats, dude.
Like, yeah, and I mean, it's just, you know, it just is one of those things where last year I think, you know, you could see that there was some different stuff with his swing that they had worked on, and it didn't work, and you know, you make the adjustment, and you're in the middle of a season that's going awfully well, so you don't necessarily have the time to stop and deal with that, right? Because it's not, you know, your only priority. You know, but now we're in the second half of his second year here. And again, like, in the beginning of the year, I think I don't know that the swing physically or mechanically looked different, but the results looked slightly different. I feel like we were getting a little bit more line drives, little bit more flash of power every now and again.
Yeah.
And it just, it has not felt that way.
But you know what I see from fans consistently with Hayward, and they're not wrong, but it's just a huge pet peeve of my Corey. It's, well, the exit velo is super high. Like he got, like his BABIP, he's getting screwed on his BABIP. His expected BABIP is higher, so he's getting unlucky. Like, there's been several fantastic pieces of work by Tom Tango, by Andrew Perpetua, by Mike Podhauser of Fangraphs, asking the question, does exit velocity or launch angle, which one of those, and you can't really isolate the two, but which one of those is more meaningful? And the conclusion, if you look at all the research, is that while exit velocity is great, it's you need the launch angle to go with it. And so Hayward can hit 110 mile per hour ground balls right the second baseman all he wants. And yeah, he does that, I would say, I have to look at the stats, but for my eye, on a pretty consistent basis. The problem with the guy is he can't lift the ball up. The ball is not going far. So you can hit the ball hard all you want, but if you're going to do it on a low plane, you're not going to get extra base hits. They're going to get caught, and you're going to be stuck with an ISO of 120 and an OPS of under 700, and that's just how it's going to be. I don't know. Hayward actually, now that I'm thinking about it, actually might be my biggest disappointment, because I really did expect something a little bit different. And like you said, I don't really see a substantial difference. The hands are lower. Like, that, great, it's fantastic. But he's getting back in the same position. I don't know. I always look at his wrist whenever he's in his hitting load, and he looks like he's still like churning that grip, just like how he did last year and how the Cubs criticized him for doing so. So
this is becoming a thing now. I think this is your MO now. You start, you know, we start with a topic, and then present a few thoughts, and then by the end of it, you've worked yourself really fully into one of those thoughts. This isn't a Jason Hayward podcast, but so to just in general to wrap up, I think overall the main, at least for us, Addison's play and development, Schwarber's results, Hayward kind of looking, as we're entering the second half, the overall numbers are better, but looks about the same, unfortunately. The starting pitching has been very bad, and the defense is certainly not DPing. May want to throw that shirt in the garbage, eh, Joe? Because that is not happening. And there's certainly others. If we miss some, feel free to tweet us. Let us know what's in particular bothered you about this first half. But I feel like that's enough negatives, I guess.
You can throw Zobrist in there, too, and his stupid wrist. And
I don't know if that counts as disappointing.
The dude has worse WOBA than Jason Hayward and Schwarber.
I guess you could say I'm disappointed in Ben for trying to be a hero and playing through a wrist injury.
That's pissed me off.
Let's go for something maybe mildly positive, although I guess in theory you could pick a negative surprise. But maybe biggest surprise or the number one thing that on July 11th, you're surprised we're talking about or is a thing?
So there's a difference for me between like surprised and encouraged. So I'm gonna do two points. The first one I think is the clear cut one, and I think you would agree with me, unless I'm missing something. But it has to be Hap, right?
Hot dogs are really feel. Oh, whoops.
Well, those two.
I thought we were gonna have a Step Brothers thing there where we said it at the same time.
But Hap has to be up there, right? Like if the dude comes in, he's
number one. He's gotta be.
Yeah, he doubles his power from his AA numbers. The dude's on pace for 30-something homers. He's playing all over the diamond, corner outfield, second base, center field. He basically said F you to Elmora. I don't see how you can't say Hap.
Yeah. No, I would agree. I think he's number one.
So the most encouraging player for me is Bryant. I mean, the dude's turning into I know the batting average is a little bit lower right now. I really don't care about that. But Bryant is turning into a guy whom you can give a long-term contract right now. I think you can even give him like 8 to 10 years and feel comfortable. Now, if you were to do the same type of contract after his rookie season, I would say, hold up, let's take a step back. And so the reason I'm encouraged by Bryant is, one, his contact rate, Corey, is above league average. That's incredible. When he was a rookie, he was, I would look it up on Fangraphs, but unfortunately it's down, but he was, I think, in the bottom three of the entire league in contact rate. And that type of profile scares me because now you're looking at someone who is fully dependent upon the long ball, and he's susceptible to whiffs, and that type of profile doesn't age too well. But now when you factor in the fact that he makes consistent contact, consistent hard contact, and he's walking at a 15% rate, you're looking at a guy who has no holes. You're looking at a guy who's like a Joey Votto, like really the best players that you've seen over the last few decades.
I think that's – I just had a brilliant idea where, you know, maybe we do separate episodes, you know, maybe call it like sensual baseball or something like that. And it's just somebody with a sexier voice than either you or me.
We could bring
just
Evan
reading
on.
Off
He's
Chris
got that
Bryant
deeper
stats,
voice.
You know? Chris Bryant has a 950 OPS.
I could turn down like the
bass.
Yeah. I can like make my voice super
Chris
super
Bryant's
deep.
Contact rate is above league average.
But seriously, Corey, like 79%, that blows my mind. And I was thinking about this today, actually, and I don't know how, to be honest with you, it would be a lot of work, and I'm too lazy to do it, but I would love to go and look at a guy who had 30 homers at the minimum, or 25, whatever. I think Bryant hit 26 his rookie year. But find that threshold, associate that with the contact rate, and see how many of those players improve their contact rate to the degree that Bryant has done. I would imagine this might be the biggest improvement in contact rate for a power hitter that the league has ever seen. Like, I genuinely believe that that's the case. Because I guess in the last, I mean, I've been following this type of stuff in at least 8-9 years now. I've personally never seen this. So that's the most encouraging for me. But so Hap is your biggest surprise. Do you have an encouraging trend that you've seen?
Yeah, I was going to say Wilson.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like, you know, look, he has his own set of things he's working on and things he needs to improve on, and I think is by no means a finished product. But, you know, we're about looking at it here again on MLB.com in the in the archaic era of a Fangraphsless world. You know, we're at like 500 at bats for Wilson. He's got a 270, 343, 814 line. Well, 814 is the OPS. Why would they do it like that?
This is why we don't use MLB.com,
folks. They have the slash line on the main page. They use batting average, on base percentage, and OPS. It's like, that's not.
How many homers does he have?
It's not how that works.
He's like 22, right? 23?
What's up?
How many homers does he have in his career? 22, 23?
76 23. RBIs, yeah. Four stolen bases, 136 hits. And, you know, look, he's got some, again, some stuff to improve on. He still is, I think, working on dialing in some of that energy that he brings to the field. But, you know, this is a guy who looks like our catcher, you know?
Yeah.
He's got a cannon for an arm. And, you know, about 500 at bats, you know, nearing what would about be, you know, a pretty normal season, he's got numbers that'll play on offense.
And I think he'll get better, too, defensively in terms of the framing.
Yeah. You know, it would be great if we had a, you know, veteran catcher to teach him that. Montero jokes? No, too soon.
Do you think the Cubs will actually go out and get a veteran catcher?
I don't know. We still don't really know, like, what, you know, if any role David Ross is playing. That's been kind of weird.
Baseball
like,
Tonight, I think, that's the role he's playing.
Well, and I think we just, you know, he's a part of the front office. I think that we all just sort of envisioned, you know, not him, like, being in the, you know, like, he's not going to, like, sit in the grandpa in the dugout. But, you know, we haven't heard anything about any involvement like that or anything like that. But, you know, maybe they talk personally or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, well, there was a picture of the Cubs coaching staff and David behind the batting cage today.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking to myself, man, I wonder what they're talking about. Like, you know, David, do you want to come back? Like something like that. But yeah.
Yeah, listen, David, John Lester's getting pretty pissy with me.
Any tips?
Yeah. But, yeah, no, I think the most encouraging thing for me is Wilson, you know, and that's a position that I think probably even going into last year, I mean, you certainly, I don't know that many people that envisioned Wilson, you know, not only coming up and doing what he did, but being kind of solidifying his role as, the, you know, just the Cubs catcher of the future. So I think that's been a nice thing to develop. And, you know, I think he's one of those guys, too, where watching his adjustments and the way he's growing into a major league player is a lot of fun. You know, and just he's just one of those guys who you can kind of, you know, he wears his heart on his sleeve and you can kind of feel his emotions as he's going through these things. And I think it's been fun to watch him mature and, you know, hone his skills and, you know, again, just sort of develop into the Cubs backstop. So, yeah, I think Hap is pretty easily your number one. As we were talking, I think the last time you recorded, he's basically thrown all of the trade deadline plans for a real loop here.
Or has he?
Well, I don't know, but he's certainly changed, you know, moved them around a little bit, right?
I would imagine, but like, and maybe we can talk about this a little bit before we go on to the bullet predictions, but I wouldn't be surprised if Hap is still traded.
He's changed it in the sense that he's not just a prospect with high value. He's now a guy that's come to the major level and his skills have played. You know, he's not perfect, but you know, I think now you're maybe reevaluating what the asking price or the return for Ian Hap would be. Mm-hmm. And I think at least you're giving pause to, okay, like maybe before the year, we didn't really know what his role with the major league team was. You know, now he's like, what, the third best hitter in the lineup on any given day?
I would imagine,
it gives you a little bit of pause. So we did, let's see, I just wrote down some general things here, but we did surprise. We also did whatever your semantic problem with the word surprise was. Covered that too. We did biggest disappointment. Let's try this. And if you want to decline, you're more than welcome to. Do you have a favorite moment from the really enjoyable roller coaster?
Well, it's funny that
has been the first half of 2017.
It's funny that, did you read my notes that I sent to Evan?
Brendan, I don't read anything that you write.
It's pretty, because it's kind of odd, Corey, because I used like biggest moment, biggest surprise, biggest disappointment, like verbatim. So you must have.
No, this is just, you know, I feel like this is just standard recap fare.
Okay. But I mean, it was in the same order. It's just kind of weird. Anyway, biggest or best moment for me. So I did write about this, and I think it's going to be published with Evan and John Felice and Corey, if you get around to writing on the post. So it's like the biggest moments, surprises, whatever, kind of what we're doing right now in this podcast. But for me, the most enjoyable, I guess, the biggest moment, enjoyable, however you want to say it, was the Addy walk-off, because it did come in mid-April and he was really tearing the cover off the ball and the plate discipline was astounding, like really trending in the right direction. And it looked like we were seeing a shortstop evolve again. And that walk-off, Corey, I don't know if you remember that, but that was a line drive missile into the bleachers at Wrigley. And I think the date was like April 19th. Sorry, it was very meaningful. But, I mean, you can't go against the banner-raising game. Like, you know,
doesn't that feel like a decade ago?
It does. You just got to keep watching those World Series highlights just to get the
yeah, I watched the them yesterday.
Yeah, I was watching this this morning. But that banner raising game, and it's good to always reflect on that, because I mean, we never know when we'll be able to do that again. But that particular event, Corey, was probably the most memorable event, I think, in Wrigley's history. You can say the World Series and clinching the pennant and whatnot, but adding something like that to Wrigley's historic aura, adding a World Series banner to that is quite significant. And I don't know. I remember walking into the stadium, and I know I mentioned this, but someone behind me says, "Wow, I've never seen so many happy people." And that was absolutely the correct vibe. Everyone was just so jubilant and happy, and everyone was talking. And the rain, even during the rain delay, people were very happy. I had to be in LA the next morning, literally at 8:30, and so you know I got like 2 hours of sleep and went straight to the airport. So that was very memorable, and just seeing Rizzo carry the trophy, walking out to AC/DC blaring, and size. I mean, I get goosebumps thinking about it. So I think that has to be the most memorable moment. Absolutely.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I was the walk off was going to be mine as well.
The Addy walk off.
Yeah, I was at that game. It was great.
Ooh.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's not that many.
The Schwarber Grand Slam too. That was good.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem with a lot of these potential moments is that we were not really allowed even a breath to appreciate them. You know, I'm thinking on like the John Jay game that we had recently, and
which one?
You know, et cetera.
Well, I mean,
et cetera of the great moments of this year. But, you know, it just feels like with so many of them, it's like the next day it's some disaster. And, you know, you don't even really get to, get to appreciate it. You know, the Schwarber thing was one in a litany of moments where it's like, oh, okay, you know, the team's turning a corner, Schwarber's turning a corner.
And then he gets sent down 3 weeks later.
Yeah, that wasn't true. That wasn't happening. So, yeah, I was going to say the Addy one. That was just fun. I think you're right. The banner raising, the ring raising was fun. You know, those were just obviously very special nights, unique nights that, you know, plenty of people before us have never experienced.
Yeah.
So
well, I mean, the LA games all sucked, but I mean, sitting behind home plate, being that close to the guys was pretty cool, right? I mean, you'll always savor that. Do you even know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, sure.
I know they got destroyed, but
the benefit of foresight, I would have yelled some different things.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, no, I mean, I think definitely that first 2 weeks or so, you know, even starting in St. Louis, Wilson, you know, that game tying home run, even though they lose that game, that was a lot of fun. Schwarber, you know, with the game winning home run in I think the third game in that first St. Louis series, was a lot of fun, you know, and that was just sort of the, hey, the world champs are here time, you know. I think we're kind of past it, you know, we're kind of too far into this season to really, you know, be kind of still sticking to that. Obviously, they're still the defending champs, but the first week or two was like literally every word out of every broadcaster, fan, everybody's mouth was like, okay, here are the world champion Cubs. You know, so that was, yeah, I think a very special time. And had some very special nights and very memorable nights. So, yeah, I guess I would say that. I don't really know. You know, like I said, it's just it's been a weird period where, you know, you're kind of just thrust back into a different mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe the next day. I feel like we've been doing that for a while now. So it's a little hard to pinpoint those moments. You know, and it doesn't make them meaningless, but I think it makes it hard to really put that much you know, grand emphasis on them, because it's like, well, yeah, it was great, but you know.
Well, moving on to more encouraging stuff. Only you can turn that segment into like a negative.
The absolute best to put a positive spin on this.
Yeah, we can tell.
Is not. I mean, you're running through these lists. I mean, of like encouraging players. Like I don't know. You know.
But okay. Let's kind of transition here. So second half bold predictions. If you remember last year, we said the source of Arrieta would win a Cy Young. I think I even said that last year. Very wrong. I did say, however, that the Cubs would go out on a very large winning streak out of the gate, and they did do that. So kudos to myself. But let's do this again. So let's do our top three bold second half predictions. And let's do your third. I'll do my third. We'll switch off. So what's your third bold prediction, Corey?
Are we going in reverse order?
Yeah, we're going reverse order. So you go three, I go three, you go two, I go two. And we'll finish off with our biggest one.
All right, now I'll grant you this. I mean, some of this is wishful thinking. I debated, you know, do I want to play like a reverse jinx game? Do I want to, you know, do like kind of wishful thinking? I don't know. So there might be a little bit of little mix of all that in there. But I will say, I'll throw out there, you know, I'm going to throw this out into the universe and just kind of hope it comes back to me, I guess. But I'm going to throw out there that John Lackey, not in the rotation by the time the year ends.
Okay, that's a good one.
Somewhere between now and, you know, September, he's not in this rotation.
So let's take it a step further. I'm not going to say who's going to replace him, but I'm going to ask you, why won't he be in there?
Well, you know, I mean, if I'm being hopeful, Kyle Hendricks, who had a rehab start last night, threw about 45 pitches. You know, it was his first rehab outing, so it sounded like it went well. I'm only saying that because we didn't mention it.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, not too much to glean from it.
So you think Monty sticks? Is that why?
Yeah, I mean, I think I guess I would be hopeful, or my ideal scenario, you know, if even sticking realistically, would be Hendricks comes back and is healthy and is, you know, closer to last year's form. Monty sticks in kind of that fifth spot, and, you know, they go out and get somebody that's better than John Lackey, Brendan.
Okay. I'm fine with that. That's a good one, actually. My third bold prediction. Okay, I mean, this is kind of a, this is a bold one. It could be number one if you want, but I think Chris Bryant wins the MVP again. Yeah, I was looking at the leaderboard again. This is before FanGraphs went down, but I mean, Bryant's basically around the same wOBA pace that he was around last year. So he's around 375-ish right now. I think he's going to go off in the second half, just based on what I've been seeing. I know he's been slumping recently, but he's too good of a hitter to continue this. Just the discipline, the contact, the homers. I mean, I'm not going to regurgitate what I just said, but when you combine all that with the defense and the base running, and I think he's going to hit more homers the second half, I think he's going to win the MVP. I think he's going to bat around 300. I think you're going to get 45 to 50 homers. The RBI is whatever you want, but when you factor in the defensive versatility, I think we might be maybe even seeing him play a little bit more outfield, and depending on what they do at the trade deadline. Yeah, I think Chris Bryant wins the MVP again. That's my third one.
Okay. So for number two, man, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to throw, I don't have like a, I guess I need like a number to relate it to. I really need FanGraphs here, Bennett. I mean, I just in, you know, plain terms, I think Schwarber has a good second half.
What qualifies for you is good? Like what type of wOBA? Like 350?
I mean, not hitting 170. You know what I mean? Like I closer to what we've seen from him outside of just this, you know, first half.
So you think Schwarber gets it together, essentially, is what you're saying?
Yeah, but fine, okay. Let's put it that way. Yeah, I liked a couple of, you know, I liked he went the other way a few times. I don't remember if that was Saturday or Sunday, but, you know, just looked to be getting more comfortable at the plate. Uh-huh. And I think he's just a better hitter than those numbers. Uh-huh. I guess that's, you know, I don't know how bold that is.
Yeah.
I don't think we're having a Kyle Schwarber problem by the end of the year.
I would agree with that. I would put that in my bold predictions, but for the sake of being different, for my second one, I think Jake Arrieta has a decent second half, and maybe it's because I personally need him to have a better second half for my own sanity.
And so does his bank account.
And so does his bank account. But I mean, we talked about Arrieta extensively, and I've for the most part have talked about him in a negative light, justifiably. But I know the last start he gave up that homer, and he ended up unraveling in the middle of the game. But I've watched every one of these starts this year very closely in terms of command. I've watched almost every one of his starts closely since 2015, to be honest. And I think he looks better this year than he did last year. I know the velocity down. I know he has a lower margin of error. But who knows? Maybe the velocity comes back. But the biggest reason why I think he's going to have a better second half is because I do think the command is better. And I'm particularly encouraged about the changeup increase. I think that could be a really good complement to a good curve, a very good slider, and a heavy sinker. I think when the grounders start to come, and they have started to come, that's something I should get on, but I think his grounder right now is at 47%, and when we were talking on this podcast about a month and a half ago, it was around 40%. So we're seeing those grounders go up, and we've seen some better games as a result. So I think Arrieta, if I put a number to it, I'm going to say he has a 3.3 ERA with like a margin of error of plus or minus 0.3. So I can see it being his best ideal 2.9 to the worst like 3.7-ish. So yeah, I Arrieta at number two.
It'll be interesting. I'm really curious what happens to you when he's not on this team anymore. Like, what are you going to talk about?
Well, Hendricks is making a run for the next obsessive pitching watch. So
yeah,
unfortunately.
Hey, fair enough. All right, listen. You know, you want bold. I'm going to give you bold.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think I've said this on here before. Just something about it feels right. Like if this was a, you know, if this whole, these last few years had been a Hollywood script, I just get the sense that that's how this is written.
You think they're going to go like come back like guns firing essentially? Is that what we're going to get at right now?
Not even necessarily. I think they sneak in, win the division. Although granted the difference between the division and the wild card at this point is two games. So,
again, you turn a positive to a negative very fast, Corey.
Well, no, that was, now we have more opportunities to make the playoffs.
Sure. Okay.
Well, hey, we're talking about the wild card here. So I guess that is a negative, but, I think they win the division. I think they win the division with, you know, probably in the mid to high 80s in terms of wins, maybe low 90s if they go on a big run. And I think they're going to, I think I'll just say it. I think they'll win the whole thing again. I think that they're going to screw around. Everybody's been having a grand old time making fun of the Cubs and how they stink and, you know, all this other nonsense. I mean, you know, you're at the point now where like people are making fun of them because they didn't have any all-stars. Who cares? Right? Nobody else is the defending champion. Don't let anybody ever talk garbage to a defending champion because they don't have all-stars, right? You're a Dodger fan. You want to tell me that they're the best team in the league. That's one thing. That's fine, right? You're going to make fun of them or like Wade Davis blowing this all-star game tonight? Who on earth cares? They just won the World Series. When you just won the World Series, you can make fun of whatever you want. I digress.
Especially when the fans are voting too. So, yeah.
Right. So
that's it.
I think it would be fitting if everybody's really enjoying themselves right now. And the only way to end it, if I were writing this all in a script, would be the Cubs limp into the playoffs, ruin the Dodgers' great season, ruin the Nationals' great season, and, you know, then probably ruin somebody, you know, the Astros. They'll play the Astros, and the Astros are having basically the same season the Cubs had last year where everything's just hitting all at once. They're blowing teams out. Their run differential's insane, all this other stuff. And, you know, wouldn't it suck if they lose to the, like, 89-win Chicago Cubs? Mm-hmm. You think people hate us now, right? Ooh. Wait till they pull that off. Do I actually think this is going to happen? I'm going to plead the fifth on that one. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know about that, but you know, you want a bold prediction. Like, let's just throw caution to the wind here. Let's win 87 games, win the division, maybe in exciting fashion. You know, I think the Brewers are in St. Louis that last weekend of the year. I don't recall where the Cubs are, but you know, maybe you go into that weekend, with a little action maybe you're even like the wild card isn't decided yet, and you've got the Diamondbacks and Rockies.
I'm not doing the wild card thing, dude. I can't do that again. I'm just saying,
let's go. We'll have a final weekend with a lot of intrigue. You know, well, what's the seeding going to be? Who's going to get in? All this other stuff, right? And then you have all the people we live around on a daily basis going, well, it doesn't matter because the Dodgers won 180 games, you know, and Cody Bellinger and Corey Seager. And what if the Cubs just knocked them out like in five games or something, you know?
It depends on if Hendricks can get healthy.
Then they just bust through and it's the same nonsense. Bryant, Rizzo, everybody. Baez is tagging again. Buckley's hitting again. Hayward probably still rolling over to second base. But
I'm having nightmares thinking about that tonight. Okay, so that's your big – I mean, that's as bold as you can get, Corey. I think the context right now, it's almost crazy. But no, it's actually not too crazy, I think. If the team gets going on all cylinders, I mean, they have one of the most talented teams in the league. But as far as bold prediction goes, I was thinking about this. I think the World Series one obviously is like the go-to one. I think the Cubs are going to acquire two pitchers at the deadline. That's bold, but seeing some of the guys who are struggling right now that are younger and cost-controllable reminds me of not Montgomery to the same degree because Monty was a reliever, but kind of that same trend of former top prospect, really good stuff, you know, heavy fastball, good off-speed stuff. So the guys I think that could be good targets, I think this is like almost inevitable. Like I've been hoping for this for, this is the third year now. But I think the Cubs are going to go out and get, like, I think they're gonna get Kevin Gausman.
Obviously. You ruined my transition.
What's your transition?
Well, they're playing him on Friday.
Okay. Well, maybe I'm setting you up for it then. You can think about it that way. But I do think the Cubs are going to get Kevin Gausman. There was one report, and I'm forgetting who the source was, but it wasn't a particularly bad – actually, no, it was a bad source, so I'm going to take that back. There's been no sources connecting them to it. But the Orioles are in the mid-tier of division with the Yankees going up. And the Red Sox playing well, they're probably not going to get there. They're aging. You got Adam Jones getting old. So I don't know who it's going to take to get Kevin Gausman, but he's been having a terrible year, and he really has not gotten it together in Baltimore. And don't compare it to Arrieta, because Arrieta had a full plate of issues separate from Gausman's issues. And to my opinion, they're worse than Gausman's issues. But I think the Cubs are going to get him. I think it's going to cost less than half, maybe, but I'm not going to play the GM game. So I think the Cubs are going to get Kevin Gausman. The second pitcher I think they're going to get is a toss-up between two. One, you're not going to like, Corey, and you know what I'm about to say. I think Jeff Samardzija might be an option for the Cubs, and it makes sense. Really think that he's under control for three more years at $18 million. It's the exact equivalent, maybe even cheaper than the same contract that John Lackey was given as a 37-year-old. I think, and Samardzija's pitched good this year, so I think Samardzija's on the radar, but I'm not going to say they're going to get him. The second guy I think makes sense, and it's going to cost half, and it's going to cost maybe more prospects. It's going to make you feel uncomfortable, especially with how he's performed, but I think Dan Norris from Detroit is a really good option for this team. He's very similar to someone like a Danny Duffy. He has a really heavy curve, fantastic changeup, good fastball, good command. Hasn't gotten it together yet in his career. He had a good year last year, only in 14 or 15 starts. But I think the Cubs are going to get, for sure, Kevin Gausman. I think it's going to be between Samardzija and Dan Norris, and you're going to sit here with a rotation. And maybe they put Norris in the bullpen for the time being until next year, but you're going to go in with Hendricks, Arrieta, Lester, and then you get to pick between maybe Monty, maybe Samardzija, maybe Gausman, etc. So that's my bold prediction. That's pretty bold, don't you think?
Yes, I guess.
You still don't want Samardzija?
Well, I mean, you know, look, I think that's a beggars can't be choosers situation for me. You know, I can't really get so annoyed at John Lackey being out there every fifth day and turned out people who may be a better option. So, yeah.
All right. Well, let's go into the Baltimore preview, because I can tell you're already yawning. So let's just get through this.
Well, you know, I mean, you just throw out Samardzija's name, my interest level just see ya. So this actually is there's a lot of TBA on this pitching probable sheet here. So the only game that seems to be clear here is Mike Montgomery and the aforementioned Kevin Gausman. These are coming to you from Camden Yards in Baltimore. The Friday game is at 6:05, Saturday game is at 6:05, and the Sunday game is at 12:35, all Central Time. And Saturday we have TBA for the Cubs. Sunday we have TBA for the Cubs. Saturday we have Wade Miley, a lefty for the Baltimore Orioles.
They should hit him.
And Sunday they have also TBA. And I believe that one of those spots is potentially Kyle Hendricks. I don't know that we've gotten any further word on that, but there was talk of him rejoining the team in Baltimore for a good while now, and I don't know that anything that happened in the rehab outing for Tennessee yesterday is going to change that, but we have not gotten official word on that, and I'm not exactly positive what the other TBA is for. I would imagine it's just, you know, coming out of the break and deciding how you want to structure all that and looking at the next series and the Baltimore lineup and where everybody's rest is and, you know, just figuring out how you want to deploy everybody to start this. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. I think hopefully the break has done some of these guys well. You know, I don't know that there's a real tangible way to figure that out. But it would be, you know, nice to just come out and play a clean game. I mean, I think you're going to get, I think if Montgomery gives up a run in that first inning on Friday, I think the collective groan from Cubs fans across the nation and across the world will be probably audible from wherever you are. Mm. But, yeah, I mean, look, you know, beyond that, they're coming into the second half, 5.5 games back of a Brewers team that, you know, for all intents and purposes, doesn't look to be too intent on relenting that lead. So the Cubs are, you know, really out of time here for, you know, any more screwing around or struggling or adjusting or whatever it is. They really have to play pretty good baseball from here on out. You know, I know I mentioned that Colorado's been slumping and, you know, everybody letting the Dodgers run away, so that wild card is at least, you know, probably more realistic than it seemed a month ago or whatever. But, you know, the time for, you know, the hangover and the malaise is really over here if they're intent on making anything of this 2017 season. And, you know, look, you put that first half, you wear it, you eat it, and you move on. Right. I mean, there's nothing you can do now. So the results are the results, and they got to come out and show us what they got, I guess.
Yeah. Well, enjoy the next few days so you don't have to stress out about that.
You've got at least 2 more days of not watching them give up runs in the first inning or blow leads or leave runners on base. So, favor them.
What, you know, a weird position we're in. Very weird. Anyway, this has been the Cubs Related Podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes by searching Cubs Related. We're the first option that comes up. Please like, subscribe, tell all your friends about this podcast, even comment on it, give us great reviews. It helps. And then once the Cubs do finish that Baltimore series, Corey and I will hop right back on. Hopefully it's a positive one. And then we'll update you with the recap, the preview of the next series. And then at that time, we're going to be getting some probably pretty good trade rumors, I think. So it'll be fun. Until then, we'll talk to you on Sunday.